Thanks, Jason. And hello again, and it's good to be here, and it's a real privilege to be able to share with you this morning. And we're continuing on, as Jason said, in our series on Hebrews, and the sermon series is fixed on Jesus. And this morning we're looking at that struggle, the struggle and the perseverance of the journey of being a follower of Jesus. I've got Henry there doing a great job on the data. I'll just get him to put up the next slide because I just want to show you this photo. And it is a photo of Joshua, my son, standing behind a pulpit. And that's not just any old pulpit. I don't know if any of you know whose pulpit it might be. It is Billy Graham's pulpit. And this pulpit was transported with him. It was taken with him all around the world to all his hundreds of evangelistic meetings, and he would have preached at that pulpit to thousands and thousands of people. And the pulpit was custom built by the founder of IBM, and he included some cool gadgets. The angle and the height could be adjusted, and he had these little flashing lights that would give him like a time's up warning. Do you like that idea of the pulpit? Got a little flashing light. And it would light up the little section where you put your notes. There's a light there. So pretty good for its time, wasn't it? Really pretty cool. And standing at this pulpit, so Josh was standing there, I was nearby, and as you stand there, there's this audio that plays excerpts from Billy's very passionate sermons. So it's quite an experience. It's a museum that we went to in Chicago, and it's just inspiring to stand behind this pulpit. And obviously the pulpit itself has no special power, but the testimony of Billy, the man that stood behind it, is a really inspiring example of somebody that served God faithfully and preached the gospel. And as I said, we're continuing this series in Hebrews, and last week we walked through chapter 11. Does anybody remember any of the cloud of witnesses, the heroes of the faith? Just call out a name that you remember that got read out last week. Does anyone want to remember a name of the cloud of witnesses? Abraham? Who else? Do anyone remember? There's quite a lot in that chapter 11. You can cheat if you want and have a look. Moses? Jacob? Yep, Sarah might have been in there. there's quite a few. There's this great cloud of witnesses. And all of these people are witnesses to God's faithfulness. And actually, this semester I'm studying at Tabor, I'm studying history of Christianity. So I've been hearing a lot about lots of faithful Christians throughout history and how they have had a really amazing impact on the future generations of Christians. So all of these are witnesses to God's faithfulness, and they testify that faith in God is worth it. They're actually ordinary people. They are humans. But they finish the race, and their faith can inspire and encourage us. But there's one important point. They can't give us faith. They can inspire us, but they can't give it to us. For that, we need the help of Jesus. So today we're going to look at verses 4 to 13 of chapter 12. And I'm going to ask you to consider three things that we need God to give us. First one is we need him to give us the faith we need. Second one is we need him to give us the correction that we need. And the third thing is we need him to give us the strength that we need. So if we look at that first one, the faith that we need, I'm going to be sneaky and go back to verse 2 and 3 because it really gives us a very important context to the rest of this chapter. It says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so you will not grow weary and lose heart. There's an important connection between faith and fixing our eyes on Jesus. When we get to verse 4, it challenges us to consider our struggle against sin, but also to see how that pales in comparison to what Jesus endured for us. This is from the Message. In this all-out match against sin, others had suffered far worse than you, to say nothing of what Jesus went through. all that bloodshed. So don't feel sorry for yourselves. Sounds a bit harsh, doesn't it? But it's basically saying, don't give up. You guys, you can hang in there. Jesus has shown us. In previous chapters of Hebrews, faith has been described using all sorts of analogies. One would be like an adventurous journey. One might be a hazardous conflict. Another is a challenging race. But all of these analogies highlight that it's a lengthy and an obstacle-filled pilgrimage that we're on. Now, there's an admonishment to us to not give up at the first hurdle. Don't lose heart in the journey. There will be a struggle, but Jesus has paved the way for us to persevere. He's shown us how to endure under extreme adversity. So we are exhorted to fix our eyes on him and look to him for the faith that we need. Many of you probably already know that our family were missionaries in Japan. And before that time, going back a really long time ago, I studied Japanese at school and at university. And I worked as a Japanese teacher in a high school. And one of the things when I was learning Japanese that I just really loved was studying the Japanese characters, which are actually Chinese characters that Japanese borrowed. And each of these characters has an inherent meaning. So you see the character and it's already got a meaning. So it really kind of lends itself to some cool word pictures and helps you to understand different words. So I'm going to put my teacher hat on here and just show you a couple of examples. The first one is, if you put the character for mother and you put that with day, you get Mother's Day. Does it make sense? The second one I think is kind of a cool picture. If you put the character for flower with the character for fire and you put those two together, you get another word and that means fireworks. Do you get that? Flowers, you know. So anyway, I think it's cool. So as you can see, that's my jam to study Japanese characters. But all that to say, I want you to look at the next one because this is the one that's important. This is the character that makes up the word for faith. So there's two parts to it. The very first one means to believe or to trust in something. The second one means to physically look up or to seek something. If you put those together, those two characters, to believe and to look up, equals faith. In Genesis 15:5-6, there's a verse in the Bible about Abraham. It says, God says to Abraham, look up to the heavens, count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Abraham believed the Lord, and it was credited to him as righteousness. So I feel like this word picture is a great illustration of the two elements of faith. We need to believe and we need to look up, to fix our eyes on Jesus, to seek his help, to build and grow faith. And I'm going to take a verse from Hebrews chapter 11 that I think says it really well. Hebrews 11 verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. There are those words again. Faith, believe, seek. God wants us to turn to him, to seek him, to pray to him, to give us the faith we need. In Luke chapter 17, verse 5, Jesus' disciples were with him, and as they were talking to him, they said, increase our faith. Yet Jesus answers that even if they just had a tiny, tiny, small amount of faith, as small as a mustard seed, that's all they needed. That's enough. He said, you have that tiny amount of faith. You can see that tree over there. You can pick that up and send it to the ocean if you have just enough of that faith. I like the way N.T. Wright puts it. He says, it's not great faith you need. It is faith in a great God. I challenge you to pray to God, asking for the faith you need. If you haven't committed your life to Christ, if you're not following Jesus at this point, perhaps you might want to think about what's holding you back. It may well be faith that's needed to step over that final obstacle. There is a quote by Martin Luther that challenges us to see faith as a bold, confident step, something that won't let us down. And this is what he says. Faith is a living, daring confidence in God's grace. It's so sure and certain that someone would stake their life on it 1,000 times. Sounds like what that cloud of witnesses did. They staked their life on that faith. So I guess what I want to say is, if you hear nothing else in the sermon today, don't miss the opportunity to ask for the faith you need. I urge you to believe and look up, because God is faithful and he will give you the faith you need when you ask. If you are a Christian and a follower of Jesus, I urge you to continue to seek God for the faith you need, to believe and look up when life throws a challenge your way, because our God is faithful. He will freely give you the faith you need to continue in the journey. Secondly, God will give us the correction we need. This one sounds a little bit harder. So the next few verses in chapter 12 challenge us to accept the correction we need in our lives. It's actually a beautiful image of God loving us as a heavenly Father, a perfect Father who wants the best for us. He wants us to be the true image of who we were created to be. So let's read through some of these verses, and I use the Message version again for these. Have you forgotten how good parents treat children and that God regards you as his children? My dear child, don't shrug off God's discipline, but don't be crushed by it either. It's the child he loves that he disciplines. The child he embraces, he also corrects. God is educating you. That's why you must never drop out. He's treating you as dear children. This trouble you're in isn't punishment, it's training. The normal experience of children. Only irresponsible parents leave children to fend for themselves. Would you prefer an irresponsible God? We respect our parents for training and not spoiling us. So why not embrace God's training so we can truly live? While we were children, our parents did what seemed best to them. But God is doing what is best for us, training us to live godly, God's holy best. At the time, discipline isn't much fun. It always feels like it's going against the grain. Later, of course, it pays off big time, for it's the well-trained who find themselves mature in their relationship with God. So initially, when we hear the words discipline or correction, it feels a little bit negative. However, we need to consider these words in the light of a loving parent. Discipline is an outpouring of a caring parent's deep love and desire to see a child reach their full potential. God loves us enough to correct and train us for our benefit, but also for his glory. The words that were quoted here in that early section were from Proverbs chapter 3, and they paint a precious vision of God's love for us, his children. I love this phrase. It's the child he loves that he disciplines, the child he embraces, he also corrects. This picture embodies one of the tensions of parenthood. We love our children beyond measure, yet they can drive us a little bit crazy. And we see the need to help them learn the hard lessons of how to navigate life well. Imagine that scenario of a child procrastinating going to bed. Does that sound familiar? Extra trips to the toilet, I need a drink, I need another hug, I need another kiss, all those things. The tired and flustered parent is a bit exasperated and has to gently but firmly explain that sleep is really important and there's no more delays. A parent knows everyone will suffer if sleep is resisted. It's amazing because as soon as a child is asleep, how beautiful and angelic do they look? I don't know about you. I've got a lot of pictures of my children sleeping. It's a good reminder of that embrace and correction. Parents discipline their children because they love them and want the best for them. Because they are loved deeply, they're embraced, but they're corrected. I think a helpful description of tough love is tough love. And when I was 18 and first dating Owen, my parents set me a curfew to be home at night. So yes, I do remember those times, even though it was a long time ago. And I felt like, gee, that seems pretty early to me. But obviously this was appropriate in their minds as parents who were being loving and protective. And I can look back now with much more clarity and see that their discipline was all about loving and caring for me. So experienced parents and teachers know that children actually can thrive well in structured and disciplined settings. Good routines, good expectations give a sense of safety and security. When Joshua was in year three, he was nervous because he knew the teacher he was going to have that year was almost regarded as the strictest teacher in the school. And that's how everyone described her. Well, that teacher, it was hard at the beginning and it was quite strict in that classroom. Well, that teacher had to leave in term three to have an operation. And let's just say that the teacher that replaced her was less than strict. By the end of that term, Josh couldn't wait for the original strict teacher to return and just rein in and bring order to the chaos. So these verses remind us that God is treating us as dear children. His incredible love is what compels him to correct us, to restrain us, to protect us. Now, I'm unashamedly going to show you some pictures of really cute babies now. I recently got shown a gorgeous picture of Jenny and Mark Cook's beautiful little granddaughter, Claudia. I think she's 3 weeks old. Is that right? Beautiful. Look at her there on the left. There's Claudia. Yep. And for those of you that don't know, Simon and Camilla had a little baby girl about just over a week ago, and her name is Emma. Now, I wanted to show you these gorgeous photos. So what's something similar about them? These gorgeous little girls are bundled, swaddled tightly in a blanket, like cute little burritos. Look at them. All you can see is their little heads. Even though they're swaddling a newborn baby is really helpful because it gives them that security and warmth. A newborn obviously just came out of the womb and, you know, suddenly they're in this big wide world. So we swaddle them up. And even though that really restricts their movement, it helps them to sleep peacefully. And it stops their little limbs jerking them awake as they flail them. And one of the people I've been reading about in my history subject is a lady whose name is Julian of Norwich. She's a lady. She's a Christian woman who was alive in the 1300s. And she visualized God. She had this vision of God wrapping himself around her like a garment. And this is how she described it. The divine one wraps us up, holds us tight, and encloses us with tenderness. This gives us the security and warmth of his love, which reminds me of that phrase we read earlier. The child he embraces, he corrects. And it's hard to say no to children, even though at times we know it's for their best. And it's really also quite hard to see our children fail or suffer or go through some hardship. But despite the difficulty of this, we do know that resilience, perseverance, and other positive attributes can result. And James, in his book in chapter 1, verse 2 and 3 says this, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Sounds a little bit like what we just read in Hebrews. There is purpose in God's discipline, purpose that's both immediate and also long-term. So back when we read before in verse 10, it said, "God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. By his nature, our Heavenly Father only introduces discipline into our lives that will help us. In times of suffering, we are pulled closer in our dependence on God, and we are able to share more fully in his holiness." And verse 11 reminded us, discipline is not fun. It's not pleasant. In fact, it can be painful. But the ultimate outcome's positive. It says at the end of verse 11, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who've been trained by it. Now, I'm not great at gardening. And to be honest, and perhaps very jarring to many of you, I don't like gardening. I know, it's shocking. But I do admire gardens and the handiwork of other people. And my parents have a beautiful garden at the front of their house. And one of the features being an abundance of roses. So despite my lack of gardening skills, I actually do know roses need to be pruned. So that's about all I know. So I asked my mum, can you explain to me the process of pruning the roses? So she told me that roses need a major pruning once a year in winter. And if the roses are not pruned, the branches grow thinner, they're spindly, they're weak, and the flowers rarely bloom. So pruning has to be tough. It has to cut right back into the main branch, but the result is stronger branches and a lot more beautiful, sweet-smelling flowers. So let's be brutally honest. We know we need correction. We know we're not perfect. We have weaknesses. We have our guilty conscience to remind us of our failure. Just as God helps us by giving us the faith he needs, he also gives us the correction we need so we can be stronger, more fruitful. We can share in his holiness. So now I'm going to challenge you to pray for God's correction, to accept your weakness, desire to be like him, to be fruitful, live a life of righteousness and peace. We can be grateful for God's love and embrace, as well as his grace and his discipline. In the Old Testament, I wonder if you know of King David. He was pretty famous in the Old Testament. Well, King David was made aware of his weakness a number of times. And on one occasion, when he admitted his sin, he prayed this way. This is from Psalm 51. God, be merciful to me because of your faithful love. Because of your great compassion, erase the wrongs I have done. God, create a pure heart in me and make my spirit strong again. Make my spirit strong and ready to obey you. That's a great prayer. A prayer asking for the correction we need. And it also reminds me of a song, a chorus that we used to sing. Perhaps we might still sing it, I don't know. It goes like this, the main part. Change my heart, O God, make it ever true. Change my heart, O God, may I be like you. You are the potter, I am the clay. Mould me and make me. This is what I pray. This is a really brave prayer. It's a prayer that asks God to give us the correction we need. I wonder if you're brave enough to pray that way. Well, just as God gives us the faith we need and the correction we need, he also gives us the strength we need. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 12 to 13. Thanks, Henry. I'll get you to just flick to that verse. It says, therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. These words in Hebrews are really similar to some words spoken through the prophet Isaiah to encourage the exiled Jews to stay strong and keep going, waiting for God to fulfill his promise. So this is what the prophet Isaiah had said. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. And in Jewish literature, that sense of feeble or drooping hands and weak knees were actually really familiar images that portrayed discouragement and despair. So the sense of being close to giving up in the midst of that struggle. So these phrases of encouragement, strengthen your hands, steady your knees. Perhaps they could echo a coach calling out to a runner, exhorting them to keep going. Physically, we can imagine a runner in the last stages of a marathon, almost spent, but they can just see the finish line. Strengthen those hands and steady those knees. You know, keep going. Don't give up. One of the stories in the Old Testament that I think is a great example of this is the story of Nehemiah. I don't know if you're familiar with Nehemiah. So I'll give you a little bit of background. He's a great example of needing God's strength in the struggle. So Nehemiah was one of the Jews that this passage is talking about. He was exiled to another country. He was away from his home of Jerusalem. And he was serving as a cupbearer in the king's court. While he was there, he heard of the terrible state of his home, the city of Jerusalem. It was just in ruins. Through the miraculous hand of God, the king gives Nehemiah his blessing to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the city and its protective walls. Nehemiah was just so upset and wanting to do something. He was able to return and start the process of rebuilding this important city. Now, Nehemiah faces a lot of opposition to his rebuilding attempts. There are quite a lot of devious plots planned by his enemies. One of his enemies is a great name. He's called Sanballat. If you go back and read about Nehemiah, this guy Sanballat, he does not give up. He is trying really hard to get rid of Nehemiah. And what's more, there's even obstacles created from inside the community. So there's all these other problems and taxes and arguments. And Nehemiah recognized the opposition to what he knew was God's plan and purpose. And he refused to give up. And he was not going to be distracted from what God called him to do. And chapter 6 is a great chapter. In there, Nehemiah describes his opponents. And this is what he says about them. They are all trying to frighten us. They're thinking, oh, their hands will get too weak for the work and it won't be completed. And this is what Nehemiah prayed. He said, I prayed, strengthen my hands. He was like, I am not going to give up. In what aspects of your life do you feel your arms drooping? Well, where might some discouragement be creating some weak knees? God will give the spiritual strength that's needed to face the challenge in front of us. We can pray as Nehemiah did, now strengthen my hands. But perhaps, maybe you're in a place where you are feeling strengthened. Well, this is an opportunity to actually reach out with encouragement to others, to help level that path and to offer the encouragement needed for those that are in the struggle. As we close today, I just would love you to consider what the longing of your heart might be. What is it that you would like to ask God for? Because he will give us the faith we need. He will give us the strength we need and the correction we need. Perhaps it's all of the above. So I encourage you, as you think about this and as you leave today, to pray and offer your prayer to God, believing, looking up to him. Because as we can attest to, he is faithful, as the great cloud of witnesses has shown us. Thanks.
Thanks, Sarah. There were... Do you really want to ask God to correct you this week? Of course you don't. But it's a great invitation, isn't it? One of the really important things for us to admit is we are sinners who get us off track. And to have the rebuke and the correction of God in our life is good for everybody, not just ourselves. So I'd encourage you to be brave and pray that prayer. God, bring correction into my life. Help me see what needs to be straightened.